Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mehler here, and with me in the studio today is best-selling author Jacqueline Michard, and we're going to talk with her about her latest novel. It's called To If By Sea. I just finished it, and I'm telling you, it's a wonderful, wonderful read. She has many other novels as well. You probably have read some of them. I think she has 10 novels for adults anyway. The Deep End of the Ocean probably will come to mind first. Her work also includes, though, in addition to adult novels, many young adult novels. She's written children's books and essays. She's a professor of fiction and creative nonfiction at Vermont College of Fine Arts. Now, originally a Wisconsin person and somebody who actually worked at the Milwaukee Journal when Mrs. Griggs was there.
I certainly did. I sat next to Mrs. Griggs. I remember her hats. She was a charmer. No one dared to approach her. I remember Steve Byers. She was a law unto herself.
Well, I've got to tell you this. Too, if by sea, it's a book. It's a novel. I mean, I can tell it's you in there.
But not many people can, because it's so different from everything I've ever written, Larry.
It is quite a bit different. And maybe you can talk about why and how it's different and why.
Well, for one thing, it's a big adventure.
Yeah, it's three continents.
It's, yeah, sprawling adventure. The protagonist is a guy. You know, I had to consult with my five sons. Not the little ones so much, but the grown-up ones, to make sure that Frank Mercy was an authentic guy. And I wanted to write a story. I guess this story came to me in the same way that The Deep End of the Ocean did, because it's no secret. I left Wisconsin a few years ago after we had a big financial tragedy. And this is the first novel I've written since that time. And like The Deep End of the Ocean, I just took every chance that I could take. I wanted to write something that took a whole bunch of risks that I hadn't taken before. And some people respond to it wonderfully, and other people say, this doesn't sound like what you usually do. So,
but how you characterize it, you do such a wonderful job of on describing or making us feel other people's emotions and what they're going through, and I see that the early parts of the book, in particular, where you're writing about loss, that really reminded me of The Deep End of the Ocean.
Well, Frank is not that different from the main character in The Deep End of the Ocean in that he has lost everything, and he's lost faith in everything when he rescues this little boy from the tsunami in Brisbane. There never was a tsunami in Brisbane, but I had to find a place where something could happen like that and then make it happen, which other people got really angry at me for, also for not putting weather where it didn't belong. And I wanted to create an unlikely hero. I wanted to create a guy who never wanted to be a hero, never wanted to be a father. And suddenly he's thrust into taking care of this little kid that's not just alone and needs him, but can do something remarkable.
Yeah, it's amazing. Jackie Michard, our guest today, as we talk with her about her latest novel, it's called To If By Sea. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments, maybe about past writings that she's had, maybe you've had a chance already to look at this book. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Again, 1-800-642-1234. So you sure took a lot of chances in this book.
There are things in this book that couldn't really happen, of course. There's no little kid in the world who can, by the force of his will, cause people to do what he wants them to do, or, in his case, to do the right thing, which is what Ian can do. But if there was, imagine how threatening that could possibly be. If there was a kid who could walk into the Louvre and say, be good, and give me that Renoir. And that's why bad people would want to use Ian. And so that sort of sets up the tension in the novel that Frank has to keep this little boy who whose life he saves away from people who would take him and use him to bad intent.
Yeah, and that's throughout the entire book. As I'm going to skip ahead for a minute and just say, I could not figure out how you were going to end this book. It was such a revelation. And then when, of course, I'm not going to describe it, but when it happened, I thought, oh, of course, I would have. Why didn't I think of that?
It's always a big challenge to figure out how you're going to end a story, particularly if it's a big story that has so many different tentacles and tendrils to tie up at the end. And that was a challenge with this book because when my agent read the first few pages, she said, I don't know, you started out with a tsunami and a kid who's orphaned. And the kid can do something miraculous. Where are you going to go from here? And I said, well, you have to wait for the horses and the bad guys. And she said, well, I'll just have to trust you on this one. And fortunately, she did. But it was a challenge to figure out where it was going to end, but also remain true to the character. It's funny that you say making him a genuine guy. My older son said the one thing you did right with Frank Mercy is that he kept trying to do the right thing and having it turn out wrong. And in that way, he was just like Dad, and he was just like us.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, you know, here's another thing that I really wondered about, and that is how you put together. I mean, here you describe the situation around the tsunami. I mean that's something you had to research pretty carefully, I would think.
I interviewed people who survived tsunami, and got their impressions of it. And thank goodness for YouTube. I watched 100 videos that people took during storms and events like that. And it's more horrifying. I don't know. All epic weather events are horrifying. But that one is even more so in some sense because it goes on for days. There's the first storm, and then there's a second wave and a flood. And so it doesn't end right away. People continue to be harmed. People continue to be stranded and lose their home. And I wanted to find a big enough place, in Brisbane, that it would affect a large population. And putting a guy from Spring Green, Wisconsin, which is where
that's Frank the other
Mercy
part.
Is from, putting him in the middle of something like this as someone who's a widower and also a first responder just really got it off to a dramatic start. But I like drama. You know me.
Yeah, you do like drama. And
not melodrama, but drama.
And starting a book with weather.
You never do that.
You say you never start a book with weather.
No, I tell my students, my MFA students, never, and of course that means don't start it by, it was a dark and stormy night. That's what they really mean by that. But starting it with a big weather event was a risky thing too. But of course, when people are put under extraordinary pressure, that's when they really reveal themselves. And Frank was under extraordinary pressure from the first page of this book to the last page of this book.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's never a time when he's always tense. There's never a time when, well, I guess there may be a day here and there.
A day, yeah.
Here and there when he's feeling good about himself and about his family and about his life. But there's always, right to the end, there's something lurking ready to snatch away what he thinks that he cares the most about in all the world.
And I guess, you know, that's true of all of us. Yeah. We just don't know it. We don't know, and we couldn't live every day if we understood how we're standing on the trapdoor and it could open at any time.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, we're going to talk some more with our guest today, Jackie Michard. She is the author. Her latest book is called Two If by Sea. And I bet it is it doing well, by the way?
It is. It's already in the second printing, so I'm pretty thrilled about that.
Oh, man, that's great. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And we're going to take a look at the news and the weather, and we're going to find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guest, Jackie Michard. Again, the number, 1-800-642-1234. You stay with us. We'll be right back. Really happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and talking today with Jackie Michard. She is in the studio with me to talk about her latest novel. It's called Two If by Sea. She's written four bestsellers for sure. The Deep End of the Ocean, probably the one that might first come to your mind. She's also written young adult novels, children's books, essays. She's editor-in-chief and co-creator of Merit Press. She's a professor of fiction and creative nonfiction at Vermont College of Fine Arts. This woman is a busy and a hard worker, and it's great to have her with us to talk about her latest book and to talk about her writing. And certainly, I'm sure she'd be happy to answer questions that you may have about other books, about this book, about the process of writing. Give us a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, I'm thinking about all the different things that you had to study and learn about for this novel that you write about so convincingly, such as riding and horses. Were you a horse person?
We had a horse, but you couldn't really compare. our horse was not comparable in any way to Glory B. She was a very intransigent draft horse who spent all her time trying to get away from us and get to the food. But we did live on a farm, if you will, outside of Madison right before we left Madison. And it's the thing I miss most about Madison. People say that when I talk about that place, I sound like out of Africa. I sound like I'm saying I had the farm at the foot of the Ngong Hills, you know. But it wasn't. It was just a farm in Oregon, Wisconsin. But I'm still a Midwesterner at heart, and I miss Madison. Who wouldn't miss Madison?
Yeah, and of course Wisconsin plays pretty big role in this as a setting in this novel.
That's where Frank brings the little boy that he rescues back to the horse farm where he grew up in Spring Green, Wisconsin. Because in my mind, I guess I think of Spring Green as a place where anyone would be safe if they had to take someone there. And it turns out that he's not, because it's a different world. One of the things that's interesting about this story, I hope, is that there is no such thing as anonymity anymore.
No.
And there's no such thing as disappearing. I'm always beguiled by these stories, aren't you? When people say, he disappeared for 8 years, and he changed his identity, and his wife and family didn't know where he was. Because all you have to do is get on a computer, and you can find anybody any place with a few keystrokes. It's not the same way that it was even when I was a girl. There's no such thing as disappearing anymore.
Yeah, and he tries to disappear. There are forces that are sort of evil forces, really evil, really evil. About as evil. You've never written about anybody as evil as
I never
Lewis
have as Lewis. No. No. And he's very cool. And I loved creating a villain who was elegant and cool the way he was. you know, as evil in his way as the good guy last night, the basketball player who took the wonderful shot, you know, just said, "I'm going to do it." And but Lewis is a terrible bad guy, and naturally, if you had a kid who really could get you anything you wanted, or cause people go into a bank and say, "Be nice," the way Ian does, and he's only a little 4-year-old kid, "Give me $10,000," and they would do it. Naturally, someone would want to control that child.
Yeah, I'm. That's the hard thing about it. That you could have someone that good, someone that pure in a 4-year-old. Most of them are, you hope.
Most of what he wanted, of course, when he would say, "Give me this," is candy and toy trucks on his own. But if people tell a little kid that he should do something, generally he's going to trust grown-ups who take care of him and do that. And that's what Frank sort of devotes his life. I mean, I guess Frank is a disabled police officer. And he's trained to suspect everything. But somehow his love for this kid gets in his way, and he loses his instincts just a little bit because he's blinded by the emotion that we all, as parents or people who fall in love, whether it's with a partner or with a kid, we want only to believe good things.
And as you describe, and we'll go to the phones here in just a second. But as you describe his first wife, for example, you have such a way I got such a sense for the spirit of this woman, and the way you describe her makes the loss, his loss, even worse in some way, in probably every way that I can think of, to lose her and a child. And
Natalie's dead from the first page. I mean, the first thing that you find out about Natalie is that she drowned, even though she's an emergency room doctor and a trained physician. The storm was too much for her and too much for her family, and Frank's all alone until he goes out in this rescue boat and finds a car that's sinking. And I remember reading to the assembled college last year before this book was published. I was reading the part about Frank rescuing the little boy, just reading a short segment of it. And you know how intolerable it is to listen to someone else read, even if it's they're reading something good.
Yeah.
And I finished the part that I was going to read, and two students stood up in the audience and said, "Keep going." Because they couldn't believe that I was going to stop without them knowing whether he actually was able to save the kid's life.
Oh, wonderful. Bobby and Holman up with a comment or a question. Hi, Bobby. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I actually have two questions. I have, first of all, I'm wondering if the book you guys are talking about is an audiobook.
Yes, it is. I didn't read it, but a wonderful actor read it.
Okay, wonderful, because I spend a lot of time in my car. That's where I catch up on my reading a lot of times. Another thing I'm wondering is, with everything going on with the printing companies and Amazon, I'm wondering, what do you recommend is the best way to get a book published? Because I'm working on one that I'm kind of trying to decide right now if self-publishing is the way to go, or, I mean, what do you recommend?
We were just talking about this. Larry and I were talking about this during the break, and it's a really interesting question because when I started doing this, which is almost 20 years ago with The Deep End of the Ocean, there was only one way to publish a book, and it was to have an agent and have the agent submit the book to a publisher or many publishers, more likely, and one of them would make an offer to you. But now self-publishing has changed the ante in an enormous number of ways, because some people elect to go what they call the indie route and publish their own books because they make all the profits for that. I don't recommend it. And that makes me sort of an outrider in that sense. I don't recommend it, and I have good reasons that I don't recommend it.
What are those reasons?
Okay. Well, because you miss out on the traditional editing process. When people say that they want editorial control And that's one of the reasons that people self-publish. That can be absolutely death to an author. Because
so
I know...
How does an author go about finding an agent then?
Well, I can give you some really good ways to do that.
But finish your line of thought there first.
Okay. It can be death to a book because you're so close to that book, you can't even tell anymore what's wrong with it. I know that when I wrote Two of By Sea, just as when I wrote Cage of Stars or The Deep End of the Ocean or any of my other novels, by the time I finished it, I thought, gee, this isn't just the best book I've ever written. It's the best book anyone has ever written. And how wrong I was, I cannot overemphasize. Because even though I had written it and rewritten it, it still needed to go through a traditional editing process in order to become the best book that it could possibly be. And that took two more times of making major revisions.
Okay, so then your question, Bobby, again was?
How does a person find an agent?
Well, there is no magic bullet, but I can give you two recommended ways. One, find a book that you really like. In the library or in the bookstore, look at the acknowledgments. If the person doesn't hate her or his agent by that point and they haven't had an enormous fight and broken up, that person will acknowledge the good offices of his or her agent. And then you contact that agent and ask if that person is accepting new clients and represents the kind of book that you're writing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. The other way, now there is a phenomenon that didn't exist when I started doing this, and that's writers' conferences, like the good, reputable writers' conferences, big ones, like the Writer's Digest Conference. And basically, you go there as you would if you were an actor, and you were getting time with meeting an agent or an editor. You bring your chapter or chapters to the agent and the editor. You describe what you're going to do, and they decide whether they're going to read more of it and contact you, and whether ultimately that person will represent you. And I know many people, not just one or two, but a dozen, who have found agents that way or who have gotten their books published that way.
And you'd probably recommend, you know, really being prepared for a meeting like that, that to know almost exactly what you're going to say and being able to say...
Yes and no, but you shouldn't sound like a bot.
No, you shouldn't sound
like you're coming up and saying, this is a 66,000-word novel complete No, have a conversation. Talk to the person like a real human being, but do be prepared because you don't get very much time with anything in this life, and especially in publishing.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Love to hear from you. What are the connections you have with the, if any, with the, aside from the Wisconsin connection, with the other places in the book? Do you?
With Brisbane and with Italy?
Yeah.
With England?
England.
I went to Brisbane a number of years ago on book tour, and I was just bewitched. I loved everything about Australia except the politics. The people were extraordinary and kind and lovely, and I had a ball and horsed around with everybody, and I actually went to an equestrian farm of the kind that, because Australians, though they're not as prominent as Americans or English, with stadium jumping horses, are prominent in that. And also, I go to Dublin every year to teach at a writing salon.
Oh.
And sometimes I try to, because it's, you know, it's $100 to fly to England from Dublin.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I go back to Haworth Parish, you know, to northern England, so I can pretend that I see Jane Eyre that I can see Emily Bronte there. And so it's a place that I guess like Hope says in the book, it's a writer's playground,
yeah.
England.
Hope reminded me of the names. Are there any particular reasons for names like you've got Hope and you've got Mercy and Lynette, for example?
Yes. I didn't know them, but apparently there are. I guess Frank is my favorite name. I don't have a son named Frank, but I have a daughter named Francie. And I always wanted to name a character Frank. And Mercy is a good Irish name, but also I guess my subconscious understood that this would be a person of compassion. And his mother would have raised him. She's a good woman, a good Wisconsin woman, a librarian, and had raised him to have compassion. And his sister's name is Eden. So I guess these names are intended to provide the reader with some hope that despite the harrowing circumstances in this book, and they really are harrowing, that there is going to be some redemption at the end of it.
Yeah, and I don't want to leave people with the idea, oh, this is going to be a terrible book to read because of all the problems associated with it, because it's not that way at all.
No. But it is a thriller.
It's a thriller.
And the guys who are the bad guys in the book, and I can't say much more about them than that, except they're sort of a syndicate of criminals that operate very much under the radar on a worldwide basis, they're not thugs. They're elegant criminals who they are thugs if they have to be, but they're elegant schemers, and they just want everything that they can have. And I don't know anybody like Lewis. And I don't know anybody like Ian, but I know that there are a great many people in the world who just want anything that they can have at any price.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to think about it that way. to be perfectly honest, that there are people out there just like that who would kill you without even thinking about it. You'd probably enjoy having a conversation with them.
They call them sociopaths. They're absolutely ruthless. And sometimes they inhabit industries in which, they're not always preschool teachers. You know, sometimes they inhabit industries in which they earn people's trust, financial industries and other kinds of industries in which you can earn people's trust and betray it.
Now, this book it's only been out, what, a couple of weeks?
Maybe 10 days. Yeah, not quite 2 weeks.
And already in a second printing.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope it's going to be fine. I hope it's going to be successful. Everybody hopes that. And, of course, coming to Madison, you get everybody's so nice in Madison that you get a skewed belief about how good your book is.
Oh, it's good. It's
relative
good,
other
me.
People. And you come to public radio where people actually read the books, and you're gobsmacked that people are not saying, here, you have 5 seconds. Tell me what the story is. But so it's a different experience. But, yeah, I'm hoping that this book it's the one book that I've written that guys can read without fear, because it's a guy who's the protagonist, and he's not a sensitive artist. Let's put it that way. He just sort of is. He's a good man, but he's kind of blundering through life in some ways.
Have you optioned this book yet?
No, but that's. I think that's going to happen pretty soon.
This would be a great movie.
I am excited about it because it is an action book. It is a book in which there's one thing happens after the other, and just when you think there's a breathing space, there's not.
There's not. No, it's really, really a wonderful book. And you're reading. It's long. We should talk about what you're doing here in Wisconsin. In addition to talking to me and our listeners.
I came here only to talk to you and your listeners. Right. No, I am coming tonight to the library, to the downtown library. There's going to be a program at 7 o'clock that I hope everyone will come to, one of the free, wonderful library programs that Madison still does because it's a stalwart and library-loving town. Mm-hmm. And so I hope everyone will come out and see me and ask me questions about this book, but also questions that are really important, like what kind of mascara does Oprah Winfrey really wear?
Oh, man. A caller wanted to remind us that the UW-Madison's 27th Annual Writers Institute Conference, which I bet you took part in or have taken part in the past, it's April 15th through the 17th, so it's coming up pretty soon. And it's going to feature a lot of information for writers, how to find agents, and things of that nature.
It's a wonderful conference, and the university sponsors it. And you know that one of the people who came out of that, well, a number of really successful and well, like Anthony Durr, came out of that conference, who wrote All the Light We Cannot See, a major book a year ago. And many others have. And I have taken part in it. And they run it like a Swiss watch. It's a wonderful event. And also, I have met, I think, three at that event. I met three people whose books I have published through Merit Press, the young adult.
And that's something else I really wanted to talk to you about, because I have a 12-year-old daughter. She's going to be 13 soon. She reads. And the number of young adult books out there is just blown up.
It's the segment of publishing that continues to grow like wildfire, and teenagers want to read those physical books. They don't want to have the Kindle in the same way that that adults do. And Merit Press publishes, so if you're a writer out there and you're writing a realistic young adult novel, no vampires, need apply, that is in either a contemporary or a historical novel, send it to me, because I am looking for that great realistic young adult novel.
There are some really good ones out there.
They're extraordinary. And John Green, who wrote The Fault in Our Stars, has led the way to a vanguard of the resurgence of realistic young adult novels. And some of the great novels of our that are part of the American canon, like A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's a young adult novel.
And we have, and here in 20 seconds, I would say there are so many good writers out there now who have Wisconsin roots, yourself obviously included.
It's in the water system and all that clean living and cheese that has made us what we are.
Jackie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Jacqueline Michard is the author of many books, including the latest just out for a couple of weeks. It's called Two If by Sea. I was on vacation. It was the perfect time to be reading it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy it as well. And I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy the rest of the day. Lots of good things coming up here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow, we're going to do a health show, taking a look at leukemia, how it affects our bodies, and what new treatments are available. Again, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.